What if an alien biologist from outer space visited Earth? Imagine he was looking for the most intelligent of our planet's tens of millions of species. He'd probably start with the apes. They all seem pretty smart. A chimpanzee can do most of the things a 2.5-year-old human child can. If he compared their DNA, our alien investigator would discover they're almost identical. Biologically, he wouldn't hesitate to classify us humans as just another kind of chimp. But if he'd stayed and watched the way humans live and behave, he'd soon have seen a huge gulf between our capabilities and those of all the other apes. He'd have seen billions and billions of us dominating the Earth. How did that happen? How did we, Homo sapiens, become so different? In this program, we're going to take a 5-million-year journey from tree-living apes to modern man. We're going to meet our closest living relatives and discover how we used our hands to get ahead. Following in our ancestors' footsteps, we're going to see how we came up against some very serious design flaws. Why giving birth is so hard for us. Why for so many years we could do little more than grunt. And how talking is worth risking our lives for. When we open our mouths to speak, there's a chance we could choke. We'll find out how the human race almost became extinct, and what it was that saved us. And we'll be looking into the future, when by taking control of our evolution, we may be able to create perfect humans, and even defy the aging process. Homo sapiens, both man and animal, the hairless ape. Yet we're so different from all other animals on the planet. Where did we come from? For thousands of years, we turned to the supernatural for the answer. But there is another scientific explanation that we gradually evolved into what we are now over millions of years. The big clues to our past come from chimpanzees, our closest living relatives. All these chimps have been rescued from the bushmeat trade in Cameroon. They're now looked after by Dieudonné here, who has a very special relationship with them. The more we study chimps, the more we realize just how much we have in common. The evidence that shows we really are descended from a chimp-like ancestor is deep within the workings of our bodies, in our genes. 99% of our genes are exactly the same as theirs. What's the story in that 1% difference that's taken us from ape to man? In the beginning, it had nothing to do with brain power. Between 4 and 5 million years ago, our ancestors started to spend more time on the ground. Two very different strategies emerged. Chimps evolved walking on their knuckles as a way of getting around. Their hands stayed thick and solid to bear their weight. We took a more radical approach. The first step in our journey was just that. We stood up on two legs. Since then, we've never looked back. But our brains weren't as big as they are today. Five million years ago, they were much smaller, the same size as the chimps. So why was walking upright such a crucial step? By putting all our weight on our feet, we freed up our hands to do other things. The chimps here have been playing with Dieudonné's shoelaces for years. There seems to be an element of competition. Chimps never give up. They tie themselves in knots trying to get it right. However hard they practice, though, they can't compete with us. As we all know, learning to tie your shoelaces is more complicated than it looks. And chimps just don't have what it takes. A delicate precision grip between finger and thumb. Our thumbs are longer and more flexible than those of chimps. So our hands have become precision instruments which we can use in an extraordinary variety of ways. Ancestors didn't acquire this new anatomy overnight. It also took an important change in the climate to make this evolutionary leap away from the chimps. It was then that we parted company. The chimps stayed in the trees, while we walked out onto the newly formed African savannah. The climate change suited our ancestors very well. Over the next few million years, it got drier and drier, completely transforming the landscape from thick forest into open plains. As our ancestors used their hands more and more for holding things, it led us to the next big landmark on our journey. the creation of tools. Some of the earliest have been found in caves just like this. All these tools were very simple and also very similar. This was state-of-the-art technology 2.5 million years ago. It's actually a kind of ape man's penknife. This cutting edge almost matches that of steel. The basic design didn't change for 1 million years. So around 5,000 generations of hominids would have handled tools just like these. It's remarkable when you think how much modern technology, like the mobile phone, has moved on in just the last 10 years. Today, one person could have owned all these different types of phones. But that didn't mean that the ancient tool users were standing still. Once we'd left the trees for the plains, we had a new challenge to face. We were not alone. Taking a walk on the savannah on your own is asking for trouble, and it gets more dangerous the darker it becomes. Because this is the domain of the big cats. At night, baboons try to find a hiding place. They stick close together and, if they can, take refuge in a tree. But when they hear a leopard coming, they still panic because they can't see well at night. The leopard aims to terrorize the troop into breaking ranks. Once separated from the rest, a baboon's a sitting target. Imagine what it would have been like for our ancestors out here, 24 hours a day, trying to keep their families safe from wild animals. This is no place for a soft, defenseless human to be out late on their own. And there's solid evidence to show we humans really were under attack. Again, the clues lie deep in ancient caves. Ape man's skulls have been found with holes in them that exactly match the teeth of leopard, hyena, and saber-toothed tiger. One cave contained the remains of over 300 baboons and 150 ape men. Between 1 and 3 million years ago, our ancestors were being torn apart and eaten by big cats. Even by day, life here is no walk in the park. But at least baboons, like us, can see much better in the daylight. They live in large troops, which means many pairs of eyes to spot a threat, and more combined force to fight off a predator. Safety in numbers gives baboons surprising confidence. In fact, they're downright cocky. For our ancestors too, sticking together was the best way to avoid ending up as cat food. The communal life created new challenges, and forced us to really start using our brains. Living together brings a whole new element, a social life. But the bigger your group, the bigger your social problems can be. You need a bigger brain to cope. In a group, working at friendships and alliances is crucial. You need to remember who's who and what's what. You need to be a diplomat, so you don't get on the wrong side of those with more powerful weapons than you. A single social gaffe can be disastrous. As we too began to live in larger groups for safety, so our brains evolved to cope. And our brains continued to get bigger, almost four times bigger, so our skulls had to get larger too. And this gave us our next challenge. Because being the two-legged brain boxes of the savannah now gave us a problem our four-legged friends didn't have. Take wildebeest. Because they walk on all fours, they can afford to have wide hips. That makes giving birth quick and easy. Important with so many predators around. Although the baby wildebeest is big, its brain and skull are quite small in relation to its body size, so it can slip out easily. But for humans, birth is where we pay the price for our big brain. If we move from the Kenyan plains to the city of Nairobi and look at the physique of modern woman, we can see why. The best design for walking upright is a slender body with narrow hips. But narrow hips are the worst possible design for giving birth to big-brained humans. This was perhaps the biggest stumbling block we humans faced in our whole journey of life. We were stuck. Until evolution came up with a surprising solution. Push down your chin forward. Unlike almost all other mammals, our skull isn't fully formed at birth. A human baby's head is soft and pliable, allowing it to pass down the narrow birth canal. During the first 12 months of life, the bony skull plates gradually fuse together to protect the brain. In effect, we're all born premature. So for the first few months, a human baby is extremely vulnerable, requiring constant care. But the payoff, a giant brain, far outweighs the risk. Another biological problem solved. So 300,000 years ago, big-brained man, Homo sapiens, arrived. We can see the evidence of our greater intelligence in the new technology that early ape men never had. a more sophisticated toolkit. Which includes spear points, as well as a variety of scrapers and cutters for butchering meat. Found alongside those tools was a simple lump of rock that would lead to the great masterpieces of the future. It's ochre, crumbly iron oxide. This piece was found in Blombos Cave near Cape Town in South Africa and is at least 70,000 years old. What's amazing is that it's engraved. This abstract etching is the first recorded work of art. It marks the roots of what we now call culture or civilization. And this pig's jawbone might even offer a clue to when religion first began. It was discovered in the same grave as an early human, and it's dated at more than 100,000 years old. It's the earliest evidence of ritual burial. The act of carefully burying a body with other objects suggests that those people believed that death wasn't the end, that the spirit lived on. Art and religion set us apart from the rest of the animal kingdom and led to our great civilizations. Many scientists believe that the trigger for these extraordinary breakthroughs was something we all take for granted. Language.
This is where the main Palm Sunday procession took place.
From fossils, scientists know that our voice box, or larynx, was much higher up in our ancestors than it is today. It's still in this position in the chimps and other apes. If this was still the same for us, apart from the odd grunt or two, we wouldn't have the power of speech. But around 200,000 years ago, our larynx dropped to where it is today, allowing us to make more complex sounds. This is when we started to talk. But why is talking so important to the story of the human race? You can find a clue back in West Africa. These chimps are collecting nuts to eat. They have to use a rock to crack open the shells. And they pick up these skills by copying. The young ones learn by watching their mothers closely. In Britain, children also gather nuts, but not to eat, to play with. These are chestnuts, or conkers.
Yeah.
Like the chimps, the younger children learn by copying the older ones, handing down skills across the generations. The difference is that it can take a young chimp 6 years to perfect its nutcracking technique. We humans, on the other hand, can use a shortcut.
Oh, that's a nice little conker. Don't eat it, Dave. Don't put it in the pile.
We can teach even very young children simply by talking to them.
Are you opening them with your heels?
Yeah.
Are you? It's much easier to do it like that, isn't it?
So they can learn a new technique for opening the conkers instantly. And with language, we continue to learn new tricks all our lives. By 100,000 years ago, we were solving problems by talking together. We were using our big brains to communicate with each other as never before. But talking gave us another biological problem, and this one still hasn't been solved. Let's look at the chimps in Cameroon again. Chimps breathe mostly through their nose and hardly ever through their mouth. They use their mouth almost entirely for feeding. So air goes down one way, food another. For humans, though, it's a different story. Remember how, as a child, you were told not to talk with your mouth full? Well, there's a very good reason for this. To talk, we have to breathe through our mouths as well. So we use the same opening for talking, eating, drinking, and breathing. Usually this works out fine, but sometimes things go down the wrong way. Sometimes with tragic results. Normally when we swallow, a flap of cartilage covers the windpipe, so the food goes straight down to the stomach. But with our larynx now in its lower position, just occasionally food falls in and down the windpipe, where it blocks the airway to the lungs, making us choke. Every year in Britain alone, around 200 people choke to death. Talking has been so critical to our evolution that it's even worth risking death for.
Oh, that's better.
Are you
right?
Are you
right?
At this point in our journey, it had been 4 million years since we'd split from the apes. What happened to us during that time? Biological evolution, that is, the physical changes to our bodies, had worked some slow but crucial changes in us. First, around 4 to 5 million years ago, we stood up on two legs and walked. Then it was another 3 million years before we started getting clever with our hands. It wasn't until over 1 million years later that our brains got as big as they are today. And for all this time, our only form of conversation was probably just grunting. It wasn't until very recently along life's journey, around 200,000 years ago, that our larynx began to drop, which gave us the power of real language. Now that we could talk, our cultural evolution could take off too. Cultural evolution was a brand new trend. It isn't based on genes like biological evolution. It's about the sharing of ideas. Talking allowed knowledge to be passed around quickly. It was one of the greatest revolutions in the journey of life that set us on the path to world dominance. But perhaps the greatest drama in the story of the human race was yet to come. 75,000 years ago, when modern talking humans were thriving here in Africa, disaster struck. On the other side of the world, in Sumatra, a volcano called Toba erupted. Blasted vast clouds of ash and sulfur dioxide right across the planet, blocking out the sun. It triggered a 6-year global winter, which blighted the entire world. In Africa, over 6,000 kilometers away, drought and famine followed. Millions of animals died, the animals we humans depended on for meat. Those early Homo sapiens must have been decimated too. Because of one freak act of nature, our ancestors nearly became extinct. DNA evidence suggests that perhaps as few as 1,000 people were left, which could mean that all 6 billion of us alive on Earth today are descended from those 1,000 survivors in Africa. How did we survive? Scientists now believe what really may have saved us from extinction was working together, sharing information. To get some idea of what life must have been like after Toba blew its top, you can go to the Kalahari Desert today. It's one of the harshest places anywhere in the world. But even here, there is water and food if you know where to look. The Zhuang people of northern Namibia are mainly hunter-gatherers. How do they cope with living in such heat and drought? Most importantly, they never remain isolated as a single band for long. They regularly walk for 2 to 3 days across the desert to visit different family groups. It may have been months since they last saw each other. Once here, the highlight of the visit is swapping gifts. They do it not only to cement the bonds of friendship, but also to secure cooperation and the sharing of ideas. And out here, what your neighbors tell you could well save your life. They may know where the best water sources are, or good fruiting trees, or new hunting grounds. And of course, they can tell you the gossip. Without this regular exchange of knowledge, different villages would become isolated, and without outside help, even die out. It's now thought it was our ability to talk and help each other in a hostile world that saved us from extinction after Toba erupted. It's encouraging to think that the very existence of the human race owes more to cooperation than to conflict. Gradually, the world recovered, and small bands of pioneering humans started to leave Africa and travel to the far corners of the earth. By now, we humans weren't just talking and sharing ideas. We were working together as never before. And cultural evolution was going on all around the globe. Although telling other people what you know through speech is still vital to man today, there's only so much knowledge any individual can store in the memory.
I don't know if, whether there's one up there.
Another road.
So it's not by the Lekki up by that way, is it?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, down there, yeah.
See that red building?
And no one person can know everything.
Excuse me, mate. Could you tell me the way to the library, please?
Yeah, well, round here, up the top of Park Street, round the triangle. Up on the
if someone road. Dies without passing on their ideas and culture, those ideas are lost forever. Unless, of course, they've been written down. The answer was for us to start preserving our ideas and knowledge in books. Cultural evolution could now accelerate further. Writing meant successive generations could build on what had gone before. No one could remember how to make a space rocket, but once it's written down, that information is accessible to many others. For 2,500 years, we saved our precious culture in our books. But the amount of knowledge accessible through a computer adds up to all the books in all the libraries in all the world. In the age of the internet, anyone, anywhere can tap into this vast central fund. Back in the forest reserve in Cameroon, Dieudonné can search the web and get hold of the same information as anyone at a computer anywhere else on Earth. And it's fast. A picture can be sent halfway around the world in seconds. Never before have ideas spread so widely, so quickly, whether for business, education, or purely for pleasure. Computers are now the core of modern culture. But without writing and without this power to store knowledge, where would we be? The answer is here, still in the Stone Age. If you could use a time machine to bring a Stone Age baby forward from 35,000 years ago and educate it here in our modern world, it could do anything. Become an airline pilot, doctor, even president. By the Stone Age, people were just as intelligent as us. And if a 21st century baby was sent back 35,000 years, it would be no more advanced than the people who lived then. Strip away our technology, and underneath, we're all still cavemen. That's because our genes haven't changed since the Stone Age. Both babies would have the same genetic makeup. But just suppose both babies were unlucky and were born with a serious genetic disease. In the past, this baby would have died. His defective gene would not have been passed on. It was, after all, survival of the fittest. Today, though, modern medicine is so advanced that many of us can live on despite our problem genes. Whereas in the past, we wouldn't have survived. And that's affecting human evolution as a whole. Now, without the force of natural selection, those problem genes will become more and more widespread. Fortunately, though, our most important evolutionary strong point, our big brain, may have come up with a solution. Genetic engineering. In as little as 10 years from now, we may be able to alter our children's genes before they're born. We now know which genes are involved in some 5,000 illnesses. Scientists believe they'll soon be able to manipulate these genes in a fertilized embryo. So for the first time in our evolutionary history, our children and their children could be free of genetic illness and disease. And remember, cultural evolution works faster and faster and faster. Once scientists have the power to cure these illnesses, what else may they do with that knowledge in years to come? Imagine a world where the same technology could enhance our children's looks. Could we soon be ordering up designer babies?
So, the first thing to think about, have you thought about what kind of skin?
Could we choose the perfect features for our child? Every detail.
Does that look okay?
From skin tone.
Have you thought about the colour of the eyes?
Yes,
to eye colour.
Can we have blue?
And have you thought about to really see the features of
No more nose jobs.
Have you thought about the mouth, the shape?
And no more plastic surgery.
Yeah, quite full lips, I think.
Full.
That's great.
Yeah, happy with that.
And what about their brain power?
Well, there she is. She looks like she's going to be a beautiful girl.
Yay.
Our offspring could turn out much more intelligent than us, much younger. Child geniuses could soon become the norm. Our children would be academically successful at a much earlier age. And make complex modern technology look like child's play. Some scientists even predict that by 2020, we'll be able to manipulate the genes that control aging. While we age normally over our 70 years, our children could reach 200 years and still keep their youthful good looks. We've come a long way from the chimps. Amazing, considering there's only that crucial 1% difference in our genes. Our journey of life has certainly been a rocky ride. Until now, our evolution was a game of chance. That we survived at all is something of a miracle. No one can really know for sure how much further away from chimps we'll go. The difference is that now, the choice is ours. So what might that space-age biologist find if he came back to Earth in the future? If he examined apes again, he might get quite a surprise. Before, he was comparing us humans with chimps. But if he now looked at the chimps and at the average unmodified person of today, then at the new super Homo sapiens of the future, he might well see a greater difference between a present-day human and the superhuman than he previously saw between the present-day human and the chimps. For the first time in the history of life, we can control our own evolution. Whether we choose to or not, we now have the knowledge and power to determine our biological future, our own journey of life.